Our first case, number 11-1645, is Earl Byrd versus the Commissioner of Social Security. Mr. Clardy?
Yes, sir.
Pleased to hear from you, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court. I am Timothy Clardy, representing the appellant Earl Matthew Byrd in this appeal for judicial review of the final decision of the Commissioner of Social Security denying Byrd's claim for disability insurance benefits under Title II of the Social Security Act. The appellant is requesting a reversal and remand of the Commissioner's final decision pursuant to Sentence 4 of 42 U.S.C. 405G because the decision is not supported by substantial evidence, nor did the Commissioner apply the proper legal standards. There are two main issues before this court, the first being, was it proper for the Commissioner not to give retrospective consideration to the VA assessment, which found Byrd 100% disabled due to PT or post-traumatic stress disorder, stemming entirely from his Vietnam combat experience, where the rating was made effective a year after his expiration of date last insured for disability insurance benefits.
His insurance expired in 2005?
His insurance did expire in March of 2005.
And yes, he got VA benefits for post-traumatic stress syndrome effective June of 2006?
The date he filed, yes, sir.
And you're saying that that ought to be enough to get him Social Security benefits back in 2005?
I'm saying the ALJ should not have discounted the VA rating just because it was given after the date last insured. The ALJ did provide a summary of what was in the rating decision, but then summarily dismissed it just based on the date that it was dated after the DLI.
What weight
would the ALJ have needed to give to it, even if it hadn't been? If the ALJ hadn't considered it untimely, given the difference in standards?
Well, in this circuit, in the Deloach case, those rating decisions are entitled to great weight. I'm sorry, what was the question again? Oh, what was the weight accorded to the decision? The problem is that you have... The rating decision was based on two PTSD examinations completed by an examining psychologist, Dr. Wright. And in those, there's specific language in there that certainly finds the claimant disabled as of the date of the examinations. And certainly you could retrospectively find that the claimant would have been disabled prior to his date of last insured.
So is it fair to say that your position is that the administrative law judge was required to give it some weight and erred as a matter of law by refusing to give it any weight?
That's
Is that
correct,
your position?
Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Are you saying we should reverse it and award benefits to your man, or that we should vacate it and send it back for a proper evaluation?
I would certainly love a reversal and award of benefits, and I would think the evidence supports that, but generally in this case I would think a remand is probably more proper, especially with the second argument in this case that the administrative law judge should have called upon the expertise of a medical advisor under 8320. And together, if you give retrospective consideration to the VA rating decision, the examinations upon which it was based, which is expert medical testimony, and if you look at the independent expert medical testimony of the psychologist Spurgeon Cole, who also gave information that would say that this claimant is disabled, then all of the medical expert testimony of record says that this claimant was disabled. The problem is nobody gave a retrospective diagnosis to say how far this goes back.
And that was, you're anticipating my question. I appreciate it. Is there any objective medical evidence in the record at all of the condition prior to March of 2005?
There is not.
I thought he said he'd been same situation for many years.
He had been, and in fact, he stopped working in 2001. And if you look under 8320, Social Security Regulation 8320, it says you first start with the allegations of when he stopped working and what his allegations of when his disability began.
How do you reconcile that answer to the one you gave to Judge?
Well, in fairness, my question was objective medical.
What's objective evidence then? That's right.
Medical evidence.
Well, in the Fourth Circuit's case of Moore v. Finch, the objective evidence can come after the date last insured as long as there's subjective lay evidence that is consistent with the post-dated objective evidence that you can then infer that those restrictions of abilities related to mental illness could go back prior to the date last
insured. What's the applicable law in the Fourth Circuit?
Applicable law is, I would say, is Moore v. Finch.
Well,
and it says, in that case, lay observations of the claimant's strange behavior before his date last insured enhance the possibility that medical and psychoneurotic evaluations performed after the date last insured could relate back to prove disability prior to his date last insured.
What about, that was in 1969, right?
The Moore v. Finch case?
Yeah.
Is a 1969 case, yes, sir.
What about Johnson? Isn't that the one the commissioner cabbaged on to? It's like 2005.
I'm not sure about that, Your Honor. I do know, and I point the court's attention to a lower district court in this circuit from the Southern District of West Virginia in Grimmett v. Heckler, and that's an 85 case, but it explained the role of the ALJ when reviewing psychological evaluation performed after the claimant's DLI, and it held the ALJ does not have the expert qualifications to discredit the psychological evidence based on his own lay conclusions, and must consider medical testimony after the expiration of a claimant's DLI to the extent this evidence may relate back in time. And the claimant has given reasons for why he delayed in seeking his treatment. The symptoms of the post-traumatic stress disorder itself prohibits a claimant from seeking any type of treatment, and it certainly, as his allegations that he tried to seek treatment from the VA in 96, again in 2001, and face long lines, that he decided not to do that. And I quoted a case out of the Ninth Circuit that found against the government for all the extensive delays in seeking mental health treatment when claimants come to the VA.
Legal question here. I don't know if it's in your briefs or not. What if Moore and Johnson can't be reconciled? They're both panel decisions. Which one is the law of the circuit?
I would assert that you have to look, one, the role of the administrative law judge. The administrative law judge is not a medical expert. The medical experts in this case are the psychologists who performed the evaluations. Now, none of them were asked to give a retrospective diagnosis, so one can only guess. So then it's up to the ALJ to determine, well, based on these evaluations, is this person currently disabled? And if we come to that question, then we go to my second issue regarding Social Security Regulation 8320. If we find that all the circuits, and that's where this is an argument of first impression before this court, but if the ALJ were to find that the person is currently disabled or disabled at any time after his DLI, then you're required to call a medical advisor to give that medical expert testimony that is so lacking in this case.
I think the question was, are Moore and Johnson reconcilable? That's what I understood.
And I'm sorry, I don't have Johnson in front of me.
No,
to.
I'm asking if they aren't, assume they're not. Which one's the law that we apply? One's in 1969 and one's in 2005.
Well, I'm assuming the court would defer to its most recent opinion in that. I would ask that
it might not be the law. Also, I think we might have a principle that one panel can't overrule another. So that might be a question we got to figure out here. If they're not reconcilable, they may be reconcilable, or maybe the cases are distinguishable in their facts.
Yes, sir.
I'm just asking if you thought about that legal principle, which one's controlling.
But I would certainly argue.
Your man, he was a Marine in Vietnam.
Yes, sir.
And he has post-traumatic stress syndrome.
That's right.
And the VA agrees he does.
Yes, sir.
They gave him 100% disability.
Yes.
They increased it to 100%.
And in fact, they gave it a retrospective consideration to the evaluations, because as he was being evaluated, they said, yeah, he has been this disabled back to the date he filed his.
They gave him 70% and then changed it to 100% and made it retroactive.
That's right. To the date he filed. And the only reason they didn't make it any earlier is because under their law, they can only make benefits retroactive to the date he filed for VA benefits.
Can I revisit Deloach just for a moment?
Yeah.
Deloach didn't really deal with a VA decision. Do you have anything a little more directly on point?
Yes, ma'am. And actually, this is the Ninth Circuit quoting Deloach to hold that in an SSD case, an ALJ must ordinarily give great weight.
That's McCarty?
That is, yes, McCartney versus Messineri. That in an SSD case, an ALJ must ordinarily give great weight to a VA determination of disability.
Your red light came on there for you. Your red light.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Came on. So why don't we see what the government has to say about this?
Thank you, sir.
It please the court, counsel. My name is Tom Krause, and I appear on behalf of the United States Attorney's Office for the District of South Carolina and Michael J. Astru, Commissioner of Social Security. We request that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Now, what's your answer to the question that I asked your colleague there? If Johnson and Moore can't be reconciled, which one controls?
We believe that the Johnson case would control because it does deal with a date last insured, and in the Johnson case, there was no objective evidence.
So you say they can be reconciled. I'm asking you to assume they can't be reconciled. You're trying to reconcile it. Which one's the law?
I'm not sure that I have a direct answer to that question, Your Honor.
Well, we got an in-bank case. In 2004, McMillan versus United States, where we say, in an opinion written by Chief Judge Traxler, we have made it clear that as to conflicts between panel opinions, application of the basic rule that one panel cannot overrule another requires a panel to follow the earlier of the conflicting opinions. Under that principle, the Johnson case is not the controlling principle. The Moore case is if they can't be reconciled. Do you agree with that? I read that right to you. I mean, I've done some research for you here.
I wouldn't disagree with that, no. Your Honor,
you don't agree with that?
I mean, I'm sorry. I would agree with what the court stated as to controlling authority in the circuit.
Okay.
However, I think
so. You do have to distinguish Moore some way or another.
And I think we do, Your Honor. In the Moore case, in this the case that's before the court, there was no medical evidence during the relevant period, and the claimant, Mr. Byrd, did not obtain medical evidence until more than a year after the date last insured.
Well, he said he wanted to, but he was unable to. Obtain an appointment, as I recall.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Could I ask it? I think it's the same question, but maybe just slightly differently. What is your understanding of the state of the law now, in light of Moore and Johnson, as to what a claimant has to show prior to the last date insured in order to have post last date insured evidence relate back?
He has to show some credible evidence, and it can be lay evidence.
And can it be subject to his own testimony? Because that we do have that here, do we not?
Yes, but it has to be credible. It has to be credible as testimony. And the ALJ in this case considered the Mr. Byrd's credibility and found that he was not credible. Now he talked about his condition many years in the past. He reported, you know, some of these symptoms to some of the medical, the treating and examining physicians and psychiatrists and psychologists. There is that evidence, but it's the issue is whether or not it was his burden to show that he was disabled prior to his date last insured. So he had to show credible evidence.
He said that he'd been had these was in the same condition for many years.
That's correct.
And there's 15 months between the two dates. Now, many years would be more than 15 months, right?
Yes.
But you're saying the ALJ found that was not credible testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The ALJ wasn't saying that he was not believable. The ALJ was quibbling more with the extent of the symptoms.
That's
isn't
correct.
That correct? And doesn't that make a difference?
It does, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the ALJ looked at...
Well, how do you disregard the many years?
Well, the ALJ... Here's how he found him not credible.
Consider it.
Under the ALJ looked at the medical...
And Orr's followed in a bunch of other cases. All the way up through, there's Wooldridge, and there's... Matter of fact, there are two cases decided on the same day in 1985. Cox versus Heckler, Branham versus Heckler, which said Moore's the law.
I think you have to distinguish more to this case, Your Honor. I don't know all the facts, the credibility analysis and more, but here the ALJ did a proper credibility analysis. He looked at, if you look at the medical, first of all, he testified that he had these symptoms for many, many years. The ALJ looked at the fact that when he first went into the VA, he had no mental complaints at all. It wasn't until like 6 months later when he was examined by Dr. Wright that he started talking about these symptoms. When he applied for benefits on his disability report, he gave no indication that he had a mental impairment. The actual evidence in the record closest to his date last insured, there was nothing. I mean,
perhaps it would be helpful, I think, for me if in your recitation of the facts you tether it to the language in Johnson that takes you past the limitations under which we are operating because of Moore.
Okay.
Is my question, is that not clear? I think we all understand the progression of the facts. What I'm trying to understand is how much leeway Johnson gives us to get around the holding in Moore that relates to the facts that you're giving us.
And I'm not sure that I have an answer to that question. I think...
Well, it seems to me fairly critical. If you're going to get us beyond what this court has said in Moore, there has to be something...
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Can you tell me, what is your understanding of what the court said in Moore?
No, I think that's your job.
Okay.
Well, we don't ask your question. We got the advantage on you. We can ask.
Okay.
So you need to deal with her question.
Well, I honestly can't tell you about the specific facts and Moore. I know that Moore talked about lay testimony as being sufficient.
And what in Johnson limits that?
I think that in Johnson it said that there was no medical evidence prior to the date last insured.
Well, then you're making it sound, in your own words, you're making it sound as though the two might be irreconcilable. And if they are irreconcilable, then we've established that Moore controls, have we not?
I wouldn't dispute that, but you still have to look. Again, I think you have to step back and look at the delay, whatever evidence there is in this case, whether it's credible. And I can't speak for the Moore case, but the ALJ in this case looked at the lay testimony, his subjective complaints, and found that they were not entirely credible as to his limitations during the relevant period.
Thank you.
I would also point out that the ALJ did consider the VA decision. He wasn't required to give it any particular weight. What he's required to do is to consider it and evaluate it. In this case, the ALJ evaluated the VA rating decision and gave it no weight because it wasn't dealing with the relevant period. And he gave reasons in the decision for not...
Is there any difference, material difference, between a disability under the VA and a disability under the Social Security law?
They are different standards, Your Honor.
Is there a material difference between disability that he acquired 100% of from the VA and disability under the Social Security Act, which he gets zero?
I would say there's not a material difference because the VA is, when the VA is making that decision, it's fine and he's not capable of any gainful activity. I mean, the terminology is different, the definitions, the VA has a different standard that certainly the VA doesn't go through a five-step sequential evaluation.
They said he couldn't go outside the house. He couldn't deal with people, right?
The VA.
It's sort of like Mr. Bird's a hermit. I mean, he doesn't want to be around anybody.
And there, Your Honor,
you all say he can work all over the country.
I'm sorry?
You all say he can work anywhere in the country. But under the VA, he can't go outside the house.
No, all we're saying that he didn't show during the period in time, the relevant period, that he was unable to work. And getting back to this going out, whether he's claiming that he can't go outside, he admitted that he goes to veterans meetings twice a week or once a week for 2 hours. He considers them as friends. I mean, there were some inconsistencies in the record. I mean, he's claiming on the one hand that he doesn't like people, and then he's, there's other evidence in the record showing that he does interact with people.
Could I just clarify, your position is, as I read your brief, is you seem to recognize that the VA decision was evidence that the ALA needed to consider. Is that correct? You simply, it is your assertion that the ALJ gave it the consideration it warranted.
Yes, that's
right. Given
part,
its
yes.
focus, temporal focus.
Yes, he did not ignore the decision. He considered the decision, and he gave it no weight.
And what about the fact that the ALJ refers on page 12 of his opinion? He says at the bottom, I note that no treating or examining source has stated that the claimant is disabled or unable to work. I assign little weight to Dr. Cole's findings, as they do not reflect impairments or limitations as they existed on or before March 31st, 2005. Well, Dr. Cole's findings do relate to that period. It's just that he made the assessment afterward. So it appears that the ALJ is making an incorrect statement concerning what Dr. Cole's findings related to. Is he not?
Well, Dr. Cole's evaluation was more than a year after the date last
surgery. That's correct. But the ALJ said he's assigning little weight because it does not reflect his impairment as it existed before the DLI.
Well, it did.
It was dated afterward, but Dr. Cole discussed Bird stopping work in 2001, his PTSD symptoms that he couldn't function in various social situations. Dr. Cole very clearly and explicitly talked about that before March 2005. So it seems to me the ALJ was confused.
Well,
of Dr. Cole's report.
I think what the ALJ was trying to point out is that Dr. Cole he did have part of Dr. Cole's report was a subjective narration and, Mr. Bird giving his symptoms to Dr. Cole over a period that, how he was affected over a period of years. But still, Dr. Cole's report was dealing with, his conclusions were dealing with his symptoms at the time of the evaluation.
Right, and he was an examining source that had stated that he was impaired, that the claimant was impaired, and the ALJ said no source has said that. So it seems to me the ALJ was just wrong.
Well, that statement in the decision that taken out by itself may not be entirely accurate, but that doesn't detract from the fact that the ALJ considered Dr. Cole's opinion and found that it didn't, because it was Dr. Cole was making conclusions about his impairment at the time of the evaluation. He didn't make any retrospective opinion of Mr. Bird's condition.
It might be helpful at this point for you to talk about our standard of review, and I will ask the appellant as well.
The standard of review is whether or not the ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence.
Right.
And
what is your concise response to my question as to why the standard of review compels affirmance here?
Because there is sufficient evidence that a reasonable mind could accept the ALJ's conclusion. There's substantial evidence. The ALJ made findings based on sufficient evidence in the record. Now, another fact finder may look at this case and make a different decision, but that's not the court's. That's not the court's authority to reverse just because a different fact finder would make a different decision. I don't think I have anything further to add, unless the court has questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Krause.
Thank you.
To answer the last question, it is substantial evidence, and to ensure that proper legal standards are applied. In this case, I would argue that substantial evidence does not support the ALJ's decision because of his treatment of all that medical expert testimony of record. Yes, it's all passes DLI, but he dismisses all of it. And he basically says none of it could be retrospective, and he just dismisses all of it. And that's the issue here, is he's making a decision on a slowly progressing trauma, as this is defined in Social Security ruling 8320, without any medical testimony regarding if it was disabling, two, when did it become disabled?
Well, the second has to follow the first. He wouldn't get to the second.
And I would agree with that. And that is why I did an exhaustive review of Social Security ruling 8320. And in fact, I did an exhaustive review of this exact scenario of Vietnam veterans who are applying for Social Security disability due to PTSD. And I couldn't find any circuit court of appeals decisions because, quite frankly, all the district courts sent it back saying, yes, you have to have a medical advisor on board here. And I cited all those in my reply brief. And just to note some of those, Timbers v. Astru came out of the District Court of Kansas. It was a Vietnam veteran like Byrd, awarded 100% disability. And it was based on examinations that were 18 years after his date of last insurance, and
there would first need to be a determination of whether he is disabled now. I mean, that's the threshold.
I would agree that you have to find there has to be a finding or substantial evidence supports that either the claimant is disabled now or was at some point prior to the hearing.
Right, onset first.
Right.
Until you made that threshold.
And the commissioner would argue, nope, you don't have to do that. As long as the ALJ makes no finding, then you don't even get there. And I don't think the circuit laws apply that.
That's not what he found, because there is no disability now, wasn't necessary to get there. So
the ALJ determined there was no disability prior to date last insured. He made no finding as regard at the hearing level or any time thereafter. And in fact, the district court noted, hey, there's plenty of evidence to show that the claimant could have been disabled to PTSD at the time of the hearing. And so if you get there, then that necessarily begs the question, okay, well, when was the onset of disability? Surely it wasn't the date he filed for benefits with the VA for post-traumatic stress disorder. And I note four different district case law opinions that state in there. The Moriarty decision, it says 8320 does not authorize ALJs to circumvent the ruling by withholding a finding on present disability and denying the claim based upon a determination that the claimant was not disabled as of her date last insured. And that's exactly what happened here. And I'm concerned if the circuit court adopts the commissioner's reasoning, then you set a dangerous precedent of ALJs wanting to ensure no reversals should they find unfavorably. They just won't make a finding. And under the commissioner's reading of 8320, then the ALJ can simply withhold any finding of disability, and you never get to the question of medical advisor. And I think that takes 8320 out of his context and actually makes it useless when it comes to the need for that. I will note, just regarding the facts, that he filed for VA benefits related to post-traumatic stress disorder on June 9, 2006, when it was made effective. And then all these evaluations, the ALJ should have developed the record better at the hearing as to why he said this or why he did that or what happened here. The commissioner notes in when he filed for disability in December of 07 that he didn't mention PTSD, but the record he's referring to was apparently a phone call. It's not dated. It doesn't say who that information was given by, and he already had a 70% disability rating from the VA for post-traumatic stress disorder. So it makes no sense that he wouldn't make any mention of that. And in fact, what the commissioner is pointing to in that disability report, it looks like the person who was asking him the question was only asking him about physical impairments. And that's all I have, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.